Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Well, we were still with President Trump in Israel. It's the most exciting trip. It's a world historical trip because it's the first president. President Trump is the first president that ever went to his first international travel to put Israel on his agenda. And while he was there, not only did he meet with obviously in Saudi Arabia with the king of Saudi Arabia, but he also came and he's met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, also the president of Israel. But now he even met with Abbas, the president of the Palestinian people in Bethlehem. As a matter of fact, let's go there now.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, Your Excellency, Mr. President, and dear friend Donald Trump, it's my pleasure to welcome you here in Palestine and receive you as a great guest of our people here in Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus, peace be upon him, from which the message of
love.
Beginning to condemn the horrible terrorist attack that occurred in Manchester City, the British city of Manchester, leaving tens of casualties and innocent people. I do offer my warm condolences to the Prime Minister of Britain, families of victims, and the British people. Your Excellency, meeting you in the White House early this month has given us and our Palestinian people, as well as has also giving all the nations across the region so much hope and optimism of the possibility to make true a dream, a long-awaited dream and ambition, and that is a lasting and justice-based peace. Our Palestinian people's attainment of their freedom and independence is the key to peace and stability in the world, so that the children of Palestine and Israel enjoy a safe, stable, and prosperous future. I would like to reiterate, Your Excellency, Mr. President, our commitment to cooperate with you in order to make peace and forge a historic peace deal with the Israelis, and we would like to reassert our willingness to continue to work with you as partners in fighting terrorism in our region and in the world. In this respect, I commend the importance of the holding of the Arab-Islamic-American Summit and its findings and outcomes. And conclusions, Your Excellency, Mr. President, once again, we reassert to you our positions of accepting the two-state solution along the borders of 1967, the state of Palestine with its capital as East Jerusalem, living alongside the state of Israel in peace and security and good neighborhood, as well as resolving the entire final status issues based on international law and internationally legitimate resolutions and respecting signed agreements, which sets the tone for the implementation of the Arab Peace Initiative in accordance with what has been reaffirmed in the most recent Arab summit in Jordan. Your Excellency, as you have witnessed during your, as you saw yesterday during your historic visits of holy sites in occupied East Jerusalem and today in Bethlehem, the conflict is not between religions. For respecting religions and prophets is an integral part of our religion and faith. And we are keen to keep the door open to dialogue with our Israeli neighbors from all walks of life in order to boost confidence and create a genuine peace opportunity. Our fundamental problem is with the occupation and settlement and failure of Israel to recognize the state of Palestine in the same way we recognized it, which undermines the realization of the two-state solution. The problem is not with between us and the Judaism. It's between us and occupation. I would like to draw the attention to the issue of our Palestinian prisoners who have been on hunger strike for more than 1 month. Meters away from here, in the vicinity of the Church of Nativity, and everywhere, all across Palestine, families, mothers of prisoners suffer from being denied visits to their children. And their demands are humane and just. I demand the Israeli government to meet these humane, legitimate demands. Achievement of peace, Your Excellency the President, will give us broad horizons and prospects to recover our economy and continue building our national institutions based on rule of law and in the spirit of tolerance and coexistence and a culture of peace, nonviolence, no incitement, and building bridges instead of walls inside our lands. Once again, I greet you with the warmest regards, Your Excellency, the President, and your accompanying delegation. I welcome you in Palestine, the Holy Land, wishing you success in your important tour, which will lead you to meeting His Holiness the Pope Francis, and whose dedicated, devoted efforts for peace we appreciate. Wishing you and the friendly American people a lifetime of health and happiness.
Well, you know, it'd be really, really good if what he said was true, but it's not true. It's not what they're doing there. It's just chaos when you think about it. But when we get back from this break, we're going to debunk the Palestinian lie, because these are lies being told. And of course, our president knows, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu knows, but they're still wanting to work out peace in the Middle East. I'm telling you, when you hear Abbas speak, you're thinking, well, that sounds nice. It reminds me of the previous administration that would say things and get excited about it, but then it ended out totally different.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, here is, when you think about, you hear about the BDS movement, the boycott,
the sanctions,
where they're trying to say that Israel is an apartheid state, which is so not that.
And an occupier.
It's the freest place to live in all of the Middle East.
That's
actually
right.
And then you have the Palestinian people who are constantly, they have plenty of Arab Palestinian people. They have plenty of Arab nations, space to go to, places to go to, finances to go to. But they're trying to literally take over Israel continually and split.
That's because a lot of these nations didn't even want to take them in. Arab nations didn't even want to give them land.
Right. And But I want you, let's debunk the Palestinian lie that's being told, because it's not true. Their goal is to basically destroy Israel, push Israel into the sea, and take over all that land. And the Levant that we heard continually from the previous president, he's talking about, ISIL.
It's the leadership that wants to take over. Because you have some Palestinians that live in Israel. And
not the Palestinian people, we're talking about the government.
The government.
Which is Hamas, which they voted in.
Yes.
So, but as a matter of fact, let's take a look. This is debunking the Palestinian lie.
On May 16, 2011, the New York Times published an op-ed titled "The Long Overdue Palestinian State" by Mahmoud Abbas, president of the Palestinian National Authority. In that piece, Abbas called for the United Nations to formally recognize a Palestinian state based on the pre-1967 borders, regardless of negotiations with the State of Israel. The article appeared just a few days before Barack Obama's much-anticipated speech on the Arab Spring, in which the president also tried to jumpstart peace negotiations between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. To reach an agreement on a two-state solution, Obama declared, Israel must agree to return to the pre-1967 borders, modified only by mutually agreed land swaps. Now, neither Mr. Abbas nor Mr. Obama can explain how anyone could have recognized a United Nations-designated Palestinian state that Palestinian leaders and the Arab states themselves have rejected. Of the troubles in Ireland, the poet William Butler Yeats once wrote, great hatred, little room, maimed us at the start. In Palestine at the start, there was plenty of room, more than enough room, for a prosperous Jewish state and a prosperous Arab state. After World War I ended, with the dismantling of the Ottoman Empire, the League of Nations established the Mandate for Palestine, including all of the land that is now Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip, plus the entire territory east of the Jordan River, now called the Kingdom of Jordan. The area under the mandate was as large as Syria and about half as large as Iraq. Yet the total population at the time was less than 1 million, of whom 10% were Jews. It was in that vast, underdeveloped, and underpopulated territory that the British had promised in the language of the 1917 Balfour Declaration to support the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people. The declaration also promised that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. Open Jewish immigration to the Holy Land was encouraged, as was freedom of speech, religion, and assembly for the Arabs of Palestine, rights they had sorely lacked under Turkish rule. Mired for more than two centuries in backwardness and grinding poverty, Palestinians were never recognized by the Ottoman Empire as possessing any distinctive national identity. The Palestinians quickly took advantage of their new freedom to speak bluntly, demanding a stop to the Jewish immigration which had just begun. Said one Arab representative during the Paris Peace Conference, "We will push the Zionists into the sea, or they will send us back into the desert." Arif Pasha Dajani, a Palestinian leader from Jerusalem, warned that it is impossible to live with the Jews. In all the countries where they are at present, they are not wanted because they always arrive to suck the blood of everybody. If the League of Nations will not listen to the appeal of the Arabs, this country will become a river of blood. Well, as promised, blood did flow when the Palestinian demand to end Jewish immigration was not granted. Jerusalem was the first flashpoint for regular Arab attacks on Jewish communities in April 1920. Palestinians from nearby towns poured into the old city. The Muslim mayor of Jerusalem and other notables worked up the crowd to launch a jihad against the Jews. "If we don't use force against the Zionists and against the Jews, we will never be rid of them," urged newspaper editor Arif al-Arif. The crowd shouted back, "We will drink the blood of the Jews," shouting Islamic slogans like "Muhammad's religion was born with the sword." Thousands surged through the Jewish quarter and into West Jerusalem. The mobs vented their rage against any Jew they could find, burning and looting homes and stores, and even attacking British and Arab policemen. After several days of rioting, the final toll was 6 Jews dead, hundreds beaten, and widespread destruction of property. What became known as the Nebi Musa riot was the opening shot in a 90-year war to reverse the Balfour Declaration. And things soon got worse as the Allies, to assuage the fears of Arab monarchs, separated the land east of the Jordan River out of the total area accessible to Jewish immigrants and created the Emirate of Transjordan. Reconciling the aspirations of Arabs and Jews became far more tenuous after the Balfour Declaration had to be carried out in the truncated area of Palestine from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. There was now much less room and a great deal more hatred. The decades that followed were marred by perpetual violence against the Jews, both in Palestine and in Europe. The two were often linked. Under the leadership of the Grand Mufti and President of the Supreme Muslim Council, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Arabs of Palestine waged an endless jihad against their Jewish neighbors. When the British sent a royal commission to investigate a solution, the Jews, represented by Chaim Weizmann, pressed for a partition of the territory into two states, even if the territory assigned to the Jews was the size of a tablecloth. The Peel Commission's final report, published in July 1937, proposed such a division. The Jews were offered an independent state in a small enclave along the seacoast from Tel Aviv to the north of the country, constituting about 20% of the remaining mandate territory, while the Palestinian Arabs would get 80% for their own state. Desperate for any means to be able to bring in large numbers of the endangered European Jews, the Zionists reluctantly accepted the commission's partition plan. Led by the Mufti, the Arabs rejected partition out of hand and pressed on with the armed revolt against the mandate. The British succeeded in putting down the violence for a time. Al-Husseini was sent into exile, ultimately, in Hitler's Nazi Germany, where he lived as a special guest of the Führer. But severe limitations were placed on Jewish immigration to the Holy Land in the years leading up to the Holocaust that undoubtedly directly led to the death of many thousands of European Jews. Now, following the atrocities of the Second World War, Britain relinquished authority over the mandate to the newly formed United Nations. The UN created yet another commission to try to figure out what to do with the contested territory. The United Nations Special Committee on Palestine recommended, by a vote of 7-3, yet another two-state solution, another partition plan to the General Assembly. This plan would have seen the territory divided almost equally between Jews and Arabs. Once again, the Zionists made public their acceptance of the proposal, and once again, Arab officials announced that any partition would be met with rivers of blood. Shortly after the UN vote, the 20-member Arab League sent their newly organized Arab Liberation Army against the Jews of Palestine. Elements of five regular Arab armies from Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon invaded Israel on May 15, 1948. Arab League Secretary General Abdul Rahman Azzam vowed, "This will be a war of extermination and a momentous massacre, which will be spoken of like the Mongol massacres and the Crusades." But despite their overwhelming numbers and heated rhetoric, after a year of fighting, it was the Jewish state that had won a decisive victory. Based on the 1949 armistice lines, Israel's territory expanded by almost 40%. The Palestinian Arabs were the big losers. For the second time in 10 years, their leaders rejected a partition plan that would have given them independence and more land designated for their state than for the Jewish state. Instead, they ended up with nothing, and 650,000 Palestinians became refugees. Jordan's King Abdullah sent his Arab Legion to occupy the Palestinian West Bank and annex the territory to his kingdom. Egypt took the Gaza Strip and for the next 18 years denied Palestinians any civil rights. It never occurred to the rulers of Jordan or Egypt to create a state for the homeless Palestinians, nor did new Palestinian leaders like Yasser Arafat protest this occupation of their land by foreign rulers. Now, three times in the past decade, Israeli prime ministers have offered Palestinian leaders an independent state far more generous than anything Jordan and Egypt ever allowed when they controlled the West Bank and Gaza. At Camp David in 2000, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak agreed to the border suggested by President Clinton that would have established a West Bank Gaza Palestinian state with some territorial adjustments and with the Palestinians getting East Jerusalem as their capital. For his part, Palestinian Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat walked out of negotiations, went back home, and launched the Second Intifada. Invoking Islamic Jew hatred as justification, the Palestinians conducted a three-year brutal campaign of suicide bombings against Israeli pizza parlors, wedding halls, and discotheques. In 2005, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon decided that it was against Israel's security interest to govern the 1.1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Sharon dismantled all of the Jewish settlements and pulled Israeli forces back across the 1967 borders between Israel and Gaza without even any land swaps. As an added bonus, Israel left the Palestinians a thriving flour export industry to help jumpstart the local economy. The Palestinians' response to this generosity? Well, first they destroyed the donated greenhouses and then they launched a war of missiles and rockets against civilian targets in Israel. In a September 2008 meeting in Jerusalem, then-Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert presented President Abbas with a detailed map of a future Palestinian state that, with land swaps, would constitute close to 100% of the territory of the West Bank and Gaza prior to the June 1967 war. Olmert also offered to divide Jerusalem, enabling the Palestinians to locate their capital in the eastern half of the city. Promising to come back the next day for further discussions, Abbas took Olmert's map to his Ramallah office, just a few miles outside Jerusalem, for his aides to study. But Abbas never returned with the map. This was the last time the Israeli and Palestinian leaders met. Many times over the last 63 years, both the international community and the State of Israel have offered the Arabs of Palestine their own state. each time, these offers have been met by more violence against Jewish citizens.
This is so important. You're starting to see specifically, well, you heard earlier in part of this program, when you hear a boss giving those speeches, he's just not telling the truth.
No.
And even they teach in their schools, and their children in the schools, they teach them how to kill Jews, how to harm
Jews,
how to stab Jews, how to, you know, and they pay them, name streets after them if they kill Jews and push. And he's the one that you just saw talking. That's why we wanted to be able to show you
the contrast.
Debunk it, you know, understand that they've tried everything they could to be able to stop this thing,
yeah,
and give them all this land, even up to 80% at one time. But listen, God is about to deal with the evildoer. I mean, he told me very specifically, he's going to deal with the evildoer, even if you don't believe he's going to deal with it. He's going to deal with the evildoer. And when he does that, great provision is going to come. This is an interesting trip, an amazing international trip that President Trump is taking, you know. And now here he is right there talking to a boss, you know, and a boss has already spoke. He's the president of the Palestinian people, elected Hamas government.
Yes.
And he's not a king. They actually voted him in.
Mm.
And so, and it's just, as you see, the debunking of that, how they, for years, tried to negotiate, you know, God's word's coming to pass. Even if Israel's trying to give away land, God's not going to let it happen.
No. And they tried. I mean, two major times they tried to give them this land. Mm-hmm. And they refuse it. And so the big thing about this peace negotiation is that what's to say the Palestinians are going to accept this next deal, you know?
Right. Well, they
hopefully
won't.
President Trump
they
can,
won't.
But
they won't. They won't accept it. They wouldn't. I mean, there's been almost 100% of the land. But, you know, you think about it, the God, the creator of the universe, there's going to come a day, a judgment day, and he's going to judge everyone, the nations. One of the ways he's going to judge them is in the Valley of Jehoshaphat, the Valley of Decision, what they did with the tangible land of Israel. I mean, it is a final judgment in the throne of God. And so, you know, why would you think when you see that debunking thing, you start thinking, this is not even, they're not even in the right mind. What are they saying? And it's like they're being driven by something other than just wisdom and knowledge and a desire for peace. There's something dark behind that.
Well, you remember so many times that the international community, including the United States, would give millions of dollars to the Palestinians instead of using that money for infrastructure, for hospitals, for schools.
Mm-hmm.
They built underground tunnels to attack Israel.
Yeah, they're still
and
doing
missiles.
It now. They're still doing it now. I mean, look, like termites just kind of come in. Well, I know this. I know that. So we want to give you context of that. So you heard Abbas speak, President Abbas, he's president of the elected president of the Palestinian people. They chose him. Reports are that the government pays money. If you go kill a Jew and the number of Jews you kill, and even if you die in it, your family will get paid money for the rest of their life.
Reportedly, that is the law. That is the law.
Well, some of the money, you know, from that America and other countries are giving is going towards paying somebody who's killing Jews. And then also they name streets after that. And it's like, it is so demonic. I mean, it is just, you know, and it's so, I'm so grateful if you've been watching our last programs where President Trump's coming in and saying, I'm going to stand with you, Israel. We're going to stand together. It's not going to happen on my watch. And so here is President Trump in Bethlehem during his international tour, first international tour, of speaking directly to what he hopes is going to happen with the Palestinian people in Israel. Take a look.
It's an honor to join you in Bethlehem, the city that is precious to people from all over the world. It's a precious city. As I discussed with President Abbas in Washington earlier this month, I am committed to trying to achieve a peace agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians, and I intend to do everything I can to help them achieve that goal. President Abbas assures me he is ready to work toward that goal in good faith. And Prime Minister Netanyahu has promised the same. I look forward to working with these leaders toward a lasting peace. I also look forward to working with President Abbas on other important matters, such as unlocking the potential of the Palestinian economy, which is having a very rough time, and building on our very positive counterterrorism efforts. Several days ago in Saudi Arabia, I met with the leaders of the Muslim world and Arab nations from all across the region. It was an epic gathering. It was a historic event. King Salman of Saudi Arabia could not have been kinder. And I will tell you, he's a very wise, wise man. I called on these leaders and asked them to join in a partnership to drive terrorism from their midst once and for all. It was a deeply productive meeting. People have said there has really never been anything even close in history. I believe that. Being there and seeing who was there and hearing the spirit and a lot of love, there has never been anything like that in history. And it was an honor to be involved, but great things can come from that meeting. I was gratified that President Abbas joined the summit and committed to taking firm but necessary steps to fight terrorism and confront its hateful ideology. And it's so interesting that our meeting took place on this very horrible morning of death to innocent young people. Peace can never take root in an environment where violence is tolerated, funded, and even rewarded. We must be resolute in condemning such acts in a single, unified voice. Peace is a choice we must make each day, and the United States is here to help make that dream possible for young Jewish, Christian, and Muslim children all across the region. In so doing, we will all enjoy a safer and brighter future and a safer and brighter world. In this spirit of hope, we come to Bethlehem, asking God for a more peaceful, safe, and far more tolerant world for all of us. I am truly hopeful that America can help Israel and the Palestinians forge peace and bring new hope to the region and its people. I also firmly believe that if Israel and the Palestinians can make peace, it will begin a process of peace all throughout the Middle East, and that would be an amazing accomplishment. Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is so, so very important, because this is the guy who talks about the art of the deal.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't prejudge this thing, because that's the, I think the biggest thing that's frustrating the secular press is they don't have a clue what he's going to do. Even he doesn't share with his press secretary all the time, and
no.
They're behind the ball.
He holds his cards close.
Yes, but when you know that, you know, on October the 3rd, 2016, God told me specifically that President Trump was going to be the president. And he showed me the smooth transition that would take place and that all the people that he would be inviting to the White House. But then the Lord tells Pastor John Kilpatrick, a church of his presence in Daphne, Alabama, told him specifically that God was raising up Trump and was going to give him generals to be able to keep the people, Israel, in their land. So this tension between the Palestinian governmental leaders and Israel, God's going to deal with us. He said the seed of evil is going to come down. Mm. And the seed of the righteous is going to rise. And he said specifically that when he deals with the evildoer, the moment he deals with them, provision's going to come. Great provision. I mean, he showed me this in a night vision. It was powerful. So much gold was raining down in this vision. It was like slices of gold that was coming down. You couldn't even see across the courtroom where God was dealing with the trial. So just this is a wonderful thing. We need to pray for the peace of Jerusalem, pray for Israel, and pray for God's will to come to pass this whole situation, and pray that we just do what's been written in the law for quite some time, which is to move
yes.
the embassy from Tel Aviv to the capital of Israel,
Jerusalem.
Which is Jerusalem. And I'm thinking he's probably going to tell the Palestinian people, if you don't negotiate, I'm not going to sign the waiver, and we're going to move it in. And they're going to make the decision that moves the embassy in there. It's a brilliant negotiator.
Let's see it. Let's see it happen. Let's see it. Let's see it be done.
You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Dative Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN-TV and the Dative Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.